Hello, I'm Simon Wakeling, and welcome to Six Radio on 2MCE, the show that explores issues related to libraries and archives in Australia and beyond. In today's programme, we're going to bring you excerpts from a lecture series organised by the CSU Social Work in Libraries Research Group as part of their online simulation hub, a project led by Dr. Sabine Wardle and Dr. Casey Garrison and funded by a grant from the Australian Government National Priorities and Industry Link Fund. Today you'll hear some selected highlights from two of the lectures delivered so far. The first speaker is Dr. Beth Waller, research faculty affiliate and previous director of the School of Social Work at the University of North Carolina at Charlotte, and founder of Beth Waller Consulting. Beth is a leading international figure in the growing field of social work and libraries, and co-author of the book Creating a Person-Centered Library, Best Practices for Supporting High-Needs Patrons, which will be published in December 2023 by Bloomsbury Libraries Unlimited. Beth's lecture was on the topic of trauma-informed librarianship.
Before I talk specifically about what trauma-informed librarianship means and what that is, I want to talk about the changing needs of libraries and how work has really changed over the last decade or so to impact library staff. And what we've seen over the last decade is that the psychosocial needs of library patrons have really been increasing. And the top areas of need that we see in public libraries, but also other kinds of libraries. So we're seeing similar things in school libraries, academic libraries, some special libraries. But most of the research I'm sharing today comes from public libraries. But the top areas of patron need that we see are homelessness or unsafe or unstable housing. We see patron needs, patron mental health challenges and mental health needs, people that are sometimes having mental health crises in the library. We also have seen an increase in substance use that's taking place in the library. And in many libraries, we're seeing increases in overdoses that are happening on library property. And then we've seen a general increase in poverty-related needs of patrons. And these needs have really been increasing, you know, really pretty steadily over the last decade, but then they increased dramatically with the beginning of the COVID-19 pandemic and have been increasing pretty rapidly since. And although the frequency of these needs varies based on the library and the context that you're in, we do see these same kinds of patron needs rising to the top in rural, suburban, and urban libraries. So no matter what kind of community context a library is in, we're seeing high numbers of these same kinds of needs. And again, in smaller libraries or more rural libraries, we often see lower numbers of people with these needs just because there are lower numbers of people served overall compared to a large urban library. But we see these same kinds of patron needs, and these patron needs are really causing a lot of stress for many library staff who aren't necessarily trained to work with people who have these needs. And many of these needs are trauma related or trauma associated. And many of these needs also can cause trauma for people that are serving these populations and serving people with these kinds of needs. So when I say that a need is trauma related or trauma associated, what I mean is that it's not necessarily caused by trauma directly, but it's related to trauma. So when we look at homelessness or mental health or substance use or all of these kinds of psychosocial needs, what we see is that people with these needs are highly likely to have experienced trauma preceding the development of this kind of need. And then once they have that need, they're more likely to be exposed to further trauma. So when we have patrons in our libraries who have these kinds of needs, many of them have experienced trauma and have experienced chronic or ongoing traumas. And then again, these kinds of needs can cause trauma for staff who are working with these patrons, and especially staff who don't feel like they're adequately trained to work with these populations. So now I want to talk for a minute about how trauma impacts library staff. So what we know from library worker populations is that many library staff have experienced trauma, and sometimes it's firsthand trauma that they've experienced outside of the workplace. It has nothing to do with the library, but as we were talking earlier about the prevalence of trauma, people who are working in the library have had many experiences outside of the library that have been traumatic. We also see a high number of people working in libraries who are experiencing trauma in the workplace because of patron challenges and patron needs. We also see staff who are experiencing secondary or vicarious traumatization, and we see staff who experience burnout. And these things are, they're all distinct, they're different, but they have some overlapping symptoms and way that they impact people. What we've seen is that frontline or public-facing library workers from all types of libraries in all types of communities, so again, urban, suburban, and rural, report high rates of trauma from workplace incidents. And over half in my own needs assessments report experiencing violence in their job. The incidents that staff describe include being verbally abused by patrons, experiencing physical aggression and attacks, being threatened with violence, threatened with weapons, being sexually harassed, and having people come in and destroy library property. These incidents have increased since the beginning of the pandemic and are continuing at this point to either stay steady or increase depending on the community. The current political climate is really contributing to these increased threats. So some of what's happening in the library is because of these psychosocial needs that we were talking about, people that are having problems with substance use or mental health. But some of the challenges we're seeing in libraries are actually unrelated sometimes to these psychosocial needs. And we see this growing number of threats to library staff and library directors, and threats to intellectual freedom based on people's political beliefs and trying to control the types of collections libraries have or the types of events that libraries have. Because many of these threats are specifically related to library collections that are, or events or programs that are related to sexual orientation, gender diversity, or race-related topics, we have to also acknowledge that many of these events can further perpetuate trauma for library staff that are also from these groups. But these kinds of threats and this kind of workplace trauma is growing right now. All of these things, whether we're talking about burnout, firsthand trauma, or secondary trauma, these are really complex and interconnected issues which require broad organizational solutions to address. And so that's where trauma-informed librarianship comes in. So trauma-informed librarianship is one strategy for trying to address what's happening in libraries and reduce the harm that is happening to people who are working in our libraries and also the harm to people who are visiting our libraries who are trauma survivors themselves. So when we're talking about trauma-informed librarianship, what we mean is that everybody in that library is really aware and understands how widespread trauma is, understands the signs and symptoms of trauma and how it impacts people in the space. And again, whether we're talking about patrons or coworkers, understand sort of how it shows up, that people in that library really respond to that knowledge by actually integrating it into practice and changing policies and practices of that library, based on this knowledge that they're gaining about trauma. We see library staff and everybody in that library really focusing on being sensitive to the traumatic experiences of others and trying to reduce the impact of trauma on people and reduce re-traumatization of people in the space. And we really learn to look at everything through this lens of asking ourselves, what might have happened to this person to make them be doing this behavior? Rather than our sort of human response when we see somebody do something inappropriate or bizarre, our human response is to think, what's wrong with that person for them to do that? But this is a conscious sort of reframing and thinking of things differently and stopping ourselves when we think automatically what's wrong with somebody and instead thinking, well, what might have happened to that person for them to be acting this way right now? And thinking about things through that lens doesn't change that we have to intervene. So if somebody's in our library and they're violating a policy or they're doing something they're not supposed to do, we have to respond. But changing the way we view people and thinking through this trauma-informed lens can help us have more empathy, help us have more patience, and help us respond with a more restorative kind of response rather than a punitive one. And again, a trauma-informed library has to focus on not just patrons, but also staff. The focus is really on everybody that's in that library. When we talk about becoming a trauma-informed library, we're really talking about an intentional effort. It's a long-term process, a long-term goal that a library is on. So it's not like a library can say, next week we're going to be trauma-informed. It really is instead this ongoing process rather than a destination that a library reaches. The benefits of adopting a trauma-informed approach are very broad. So trauma-informed approaches, they're really new for libraries specifically, but trauma-informed approaches have been used in many different public serving organizations for quite a few years now. And what we've learned is that adopting a trauma-informed approach creates a healthier organization for everybody in that organization, both employees and the people served, that it helps prevent re-traumatization, which can then reduce the need for both physical and mental health care and the costs of treatment for people that are interacting in that space. It helps create and sustain a welcoming place for all, which is really important for a library. That's a mission of many public or all public libraries, is to create a welcoming and inclusive space for the public. Trauma-informed approaches have been found to reduce the number of escalating events and disciplinary actions that have to take place in that space, and increases overall morale, communication, shared decision-making, and overall satisfaction among both staff and customers or patrons. So library-based social workers can do a lot of different things to help guide a library towards becoming more trauma-informed, or, you know, help the library continue to be intentional about becoming trauma-informed. And social workers are trained to work what I call across the micro to macro continuum of services. So social workers are trained to intervene and assess and work at the micro level, which is with individual people, but also at the meso level, which is working with groups of people or facilitating groups and understanding group dynamics. And then also at the macro level, which is more the organizational or the community level. So when we look at different activities that social workers can do in a library that can help become more trauma-informed, on the micro level, they can help with crisis intervention and de-escalation. So as patron challenges happen, a social worker can often help with de-escalating those situations, intervening, helping to assess somebody's needs and connecting them with what it is that they need. They can connect individual patrons to needed resources separate sometimes from crisis intervention and de-escalation, just as an ongoing practice, and can assist individual patrons with accommodations. And here in the U.S., we mean accommodations in an accessibility way related to disability. So what this means is that they can assist if we have somebody using our library who needs a disability-related accessibility change made to ensure the library is accessible for them. The social worker can often help with that process. At the meso level or group level, a library-based social worker can help by facilitating these support groups I talked about with staff, or facilitating these reflective practice groups and helping to have opportunities and create opportunities for staff to process the stress of the work, but also to identify when they need new skills or when there needs to be some sort of organizational level change to improve how staff can intervene with the situations that are happening. A library-based social worker can also provide training at the meso level on boundaries or self-care, de-escalation, those kinds of things for staff. They can facilitate book discussion groups for patrons on trauma-related or trauma-informed books or resources. They can create and help facilitate mutual aid support groups for patrons around certain kinds of issues or challenges. And they can facilitate programs in your library about resilience, mindfulness, or self-care. At the macro level or the community or organizational level, The social worker can help review library policies, looking for different outcomes for different groups and making recommendations for policy changes that could increase equity or fairness in your library. They can help create resource guides for both staff and patrons around specific kinds of needs to ensure that people are able to access the resources that are available in your local community. They can help examine space in your library for accessibility concerns. They can do needs assessments of patrons or staff groups to help you then identify strategies that you may use moving forward. They can help to inform safety protocols, especially in libraries that are adding security. Often social workers work directly with the security team to help inform and ensure that there are trauma-informed safety protocols. The social worker can help facilitate connections between your library and other needed services or organizations and can help with assisting to create and sustain a psychologically safe environment in your library.
You're listening to 6 Radio on 2MCE. Today, we're bringing you excerpts from the CSU Social Work in Libraries Research Group Lecture Series. You've just heard Dr. Beth Waller discuss trauma-informed librarianship. The second speaker today is Patrick Lloyd. Patrick is a clinical assistant professor at the University of Texas at Austin in the Steve Hicks School of Social Work. Born and raised in Houston, Texas, Patrick spent several years as a school social worker and in child welfare before, in 2016, becoming the first ever public library social worker in Texas. Patrick has served as a founding member and former co-chair of the Public Library Association's Social Worker Task Force, and he's passionate about bringing trauma-informed and anti-racist practices to public institutions, especially libraries. Patrick's presentation was titled A Light in the Dark: Courage, Protection, and the Public Library.
You probably have had some experiences with libraries and/or books that have been life-changing for you. Certainly, I have had those experiences. I was an English major way back in the day in undergraduate. However, I would also add to this that for vulnerable folks, libraries can be life-saving, especially when it's hot outside, as I know it is in Australia as well. And this is around the time that some library professionals think, well, that's not what libraries are for, and perhaps kind of make this face like Tina Fey, whether it's external or just internal in their own heads. And to that, I really say, you know, if books and movies and music and research and more books are available here, then why do we keep the buildings? I have no doubt that the politicians in my state of Texas would love to do away with physical libraries, sell the land, lay off the library staff, turn to their constituents and say, I am a fiscal conservative and I have saved so much tax dollars for you. But they don't do that. And so my question is why? And I think that it says something about how much we enjoy gathering together in public and also how rare that is these days, right? If libraries, as I'm sure many of you are already well aware, are one of the only places available where people can just hang out and not be expected to buy anything anymore. And as such, libraries these days, in my opinion, are about people, not books. That's not to say that books will not always be an intrinsic, very important part of libraries. But I think increasingly our libraries resemble community centers almost more than they do kind of traditional libraries. And I see that as a good thing because we're able to meet more of the community's needs. And as we're trying to meet the needs of the community, especially again, we're thinking specifically about vulnerable populations, that work requires building trust with folks, both individually and collectively. It requires connecting with them on a personal level. And in my opinion, that requires us to also be vulnerable, but in a different way. because a lot of the folks that we're working with in our public libraries are literally physically vulnerable. Their health is not good. Their mental health is challenging. They don't have access to clean drinking water. They may live outside. They are literally vulnerable. But in order to connect, oftentimes all of us need to be emotionally vulnerable. And so, as I say, courage really requires vulnerability. And in my opinion, vulnerability really requires courage also. This is important in the context of inviting helping professionals into a public library, because we're becoming interdisciplinary, right? The libraries are saying, hey, we're going to invite a new and different expertise into the building. And what I think that suggests is that libraries are essentially saying to social workers and helping professionals, we want to tweak what we do. We understand that we can serve the community better, and we want your expertise to influence the way that we do things. But however, that is not what we often see. This is true for myself and many of my library social work colleagues around the United States, is that folks are being hired without consideration of the Social Work Code of Ethics. In the United States, we have the National Association of Social Workers Code of Ethics, the NASW Code of Ethics. In Australia, there's the Australian Association of Social Workers Code of Ethics. In the U.S., there's also the American Library Association Code of Ethics. And I'm sure that there's an equivalent code in Australia, too. But since I'm more familiar with the states, I'll use this example. The library code, the ALA code, says that libraries must remain politically neutral. The NASW code, the social work code, says that social workers must stand up against oppression and racism. In many communities, those two codes of ethics conflict. Some communities will see standing up against oppression as an inherently political thing. I disagree. However, library administrators need to be aware of that potential conflict. And what we see is that that doesn't always happen. Furthermore, I think that social work is really at its best when it's subversive, when it's challenging the status quo. It's flying under the radar of powerful folks to try to shake things up and make life better for vulnerable people. It's at its best when we are rocking the boat. Any social worker worth their salt coming into a public institution that is probably dozens, if not hundreds of years old, is going to notice the ways in which the institution is perpetuating trauma, is perhaps still engaging in white supremacy, as we saw already. A good social worker is going to come into an institution and assist staff, assist patrons, and also hold up a mirror to the institution and rock the boat in that way. So if any of you are considering bringing someone like me into your library, you must be prepared for the boat to rock. And in fact, I would say if you hire someone and they don't rock the boat, then you might not have made a very good hire, because a good social worker is going to come in and not only work with the individuals in your library, coaching staff, developing policy, they're also going to rock the boat. And as such, we're also going to challenge the status quo and the way we've always done things, because as we all are more aware than we would probably like, status quo is not working so good. When I think about homelessness, I know that y'all are experiencing this in Australia, just like we are here in the States. We all agree homelessness is a problem. We have not fixed it, right? Nothing we have done has addressed the problem substantively. And in fact, at least here in Texas, homelessness is getting worse. We're all well aware, I think, of the increased cost of living in recent years. The houses I see out my own window right now are 40% more expensive than they were in 2013, right? People are losing their homes. We're not doing anything substantive about it. And I don't want to be too hyperbolic here, but I think often of this photo. You may recognize this. I think it was in 2021. There was a leaking oil drilling operation, and the ocean caught on fire. The Gulf of Mexico, not too far from the coast of Texas, caught on fire, And as you can see, I'm not an expert in putting out oil well fires, and maybe this makes sense in some sort of way. But what I see here is water on fire and human beings spraying water into the ocean. And when I think about status quo not working, I think that this is a powerful image of the futility of trying to send more of the same, right? We're putting water into water. The fire is continuing. I do not see it going out. And so we really have to rethink the way that we function, I think, as people, as library workers, and just life itself. Because like I said, things aren't going so well. It's a dark time right now. And I think that one thing that we can do to try and right the ship is think differently. So library patrons sometimes need a social worker. I think that there's a temptation to say that every library and every school and every hospital needs a social worker. And on the one hand, I think that would be great. Patrons don't always need a social worker, but I do think that all libraries can benefit from having us on staff or people like us. We bring this a different training, a different perspective on public service. We bring that different codes of ethics. We bring different experiences to the table. And our voice is often unusual. Keep in mind, I used to work in schools where I was one of the only social workers. I used to work in the child welfare courts, mostly comprised of CPS, Child Protective Services, caseworkers, lawyers, attorneys, that sort of thing. Again, we're the unique voice. And I think that libraries, too, can benefit from having someone with a social worker's training and expertise, because we're serving people. And as social workers, that is what we are trained in. And so I would argue that any public-facing institution like libraries could benefit from having social workers on staff, or at least consulting with them and reaching out and saying, you know, hey, we're thinking about developing X, Y, and Z. What do you think? Hey, we need to address drug use in the bathroom. What kind of policies would you recommend? That sort of thing. Even if your library cannot afford to bring somebody in, you can email me or other helping professionals in your area. And I bet you that you will receive some assistance. I, like I've said, am more than happy to talk shop with you. So as I said, if you're bringing a social worker into your library, you need to be prepared for the boat to rock. And I think that this is a challenge for many folks in administration, because in many workplaces, especially municipal government or county government, depending on what umbrella your library falls under, in government, boat rockers are not usually promoted to ship captain. The folks who climb to the top of the ladder in government, in my experience, are usually folks who play by the rules and do it the way things have always been done, because that's what most of us are comfortable with. And so I think that looking at this from a social work perspective, when we get in there, we're not going to try and become ship captain or anything like that, but we do expect to be heard. And I think one thing that has been happening, at least here in the States, is that oftentimes our administrations are not hearing us. And all of this relates back to that piece of courage, right? It's a dark time in the world, certainly. And I think that it's easy to forget about when the world's on fire, literally, and there are wars popping up all the time, and pandemics, and rising costs of living. Unfortunately, I think that oftentimes the vulnerable among us are forgotten, even more so than they were in 2019. And I think that something that we can do, that libraries can do, is to shine a light in that dark space. It provides light for the folks that we serve, the vulnerable populations that we serve, so that they can see better. But it also provides light for us, too. I think that one thing I've found is that trying to be courageous and vulnerable at the same time and speak truth to power and truth to anyone who will listen, is that it also adds light to my own life. I feel lucky to be able to do this for a living. And I think that shining that light is hard work. It requires courage. It requires vulnerability, but it benefits the people we serve. And I think it really benefits us as public servants as well.
For more information about the Social Work in Libraries lecture series, visit the Six Radio page on the 2MCE website. That's 2mce.org. Just search there for Six Radio. We'll be back in December for our final show of the year, which will feature much younger contributors than usual. Until then, happy borrowing.